You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on No Mud, No Lotus. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on No Mud, No Lotus, The Art of Transforming Suffering by Thich Nhat Hanh. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. We all want to be happy, and there are many books and teachers in the world that try to help people be happier. Yet, we all continue to suffer. Therefore, we may think that we're doing it wrong. Somehow, we are failing in happiness. That isn't true. Being able to enjoy happiness doesn't require that we have zero suffering. In fact, the art of happiness is also the art of suffering well. When we learn to acknowledge, embrace, and understand our suffering, we suffer much less. Not only that, but we're also able to go further and transform our suffering into understanding, compassion, and joy for ourselves and for others. If we focus exclusively on pursuing happiness, we may regard suffering as something to be ignored or resisted. We think of it as something that gets in the way of happiness. But the art of happiness is also, and at the same time, the art of knowing how to suffer well. If we know how to use our suffering, we can transform it and suffer much less. Knowing how to suffer well is essential to realizing true happiness. End quote. That is Thich Nhat Hanh from No Mud, No Lotus. This is our fifth note on one of Thich Nhat Hanh's books. Our others include Peace is Every Step, The Miracle of Mindfulness, Fear, and Silence. As you probably know, Thay, as he is known by his students, is one of the world's leading Buddhist monks. He is a true master, and it's a joy to connect with his powerful wisdom. I picked this book off the shelf after fires nearly burned down our town. It felt like a good time to remind myself of the fact that the good life is not and cannot be exclusively good times. Want a beautiful lotus flower? Embrace the mud, no lotus. Want a wonderful, flourishing life? Embrace the challenges. No challenges, no flourishing. As with all of Thay's books, this is short and sweet and packed with big ideas. I'm excited to share some of my favorites, so let's jump straight in. First big idea, suffering goes with happiness. Quote, when we suffer, we tend to think that suffering is all there is at the moment, and happiness belongs to some other time or place. People often ask, why do I have to suffer? Thinking we should be able to have a life without any suffering is as deluded as thinking we should be able to have a left side without a right side. The same is true of thinking we can have a life in which no happiness whatsoever is to be found. If the left says, right, you have to go away. I don't want you, I only want the left. That's nonsense, because then the left would have to stop existing as well. If there's no right, then there's no left. Where there is no suffering, there can be no happiness either, and vice versa. End quote. That's from the first chapter on The Art of Transforming Suffering. Rule number one, you will never get to a point where you are completely happy and have no suffering. Period. Our highs will be higher and our lows will be higher, which is awesome, but we will never get rid of the lows. As Dan Millman says, there are no enlightened beings, only more or less enlightened moments. Thay tells us that as a young monk, he used to think that the Buddha never suffered. But he tells us that even the Buddha suffered. The Buddha had a body, so Thay tells us, he must have at least occasionally gotten a headache or a stomachache. When he lost a friend, he felt sadness. He was human. Therefore, he suffered. He just happened to be very good at recovering his equanimity. Which reminds me of a story about the founder of Aikido, Michael Gelb, shares in his book, The Art of Connection. Apparently, Oh Sensei's students thought he always remained perfectly centered. But that wasn't the case. On one occasion, Gelb tells us that a student, quote, exclaimed to his teacher, your techniques are perfect. You never make any mistakes. You never lose your center. Oh Sensei replied, I lose my center frequently. I just find it again so quickly that you can't see it. So what does that mean for us? It means that we can quit suffering our suffering. Nothing's wrong with you. You're human. Recognizing the fact that suffering goes with happiness is the first step toward transforming our suffering. By the way, Alan Watts once said that some things so naturally go with other things that we should have a new word, goes with, to capture that dynamic. All one word, goes with. Light goes with dark. Up goes with down. Left goes with right. Suffering goes with happiness. Little PS here. I got that whole your highs will be higher and your lows will be higher from Jose Silva and Bert Goldman's The Silva Mind Control Method of Mental Dynamics, where they say, quote, unremitting happiness, of course, is not a possible or desirable state. According to the principle of rhythm, there is always an inflow and an outflow, an ebb tide and a flood tide. You'll always have highs and lows. There's no way to avoid that. However, your highs will be higher and your lows will be higher. And you'll find that what is a depressive state for you might be a moderately happy state for someone unaware of the five rules of happiness. By the way, PS number two here, there are five rules of happiness. Quote, the five rules are, number one, if you like something, enjoy it. Number two, if you don't like something, avoid it. Number three, if you don't like something and can't avoid it, change it. Number four, if you can't or choose not to, important distinction there, avoid or change something you don't like, then accept it. And number five, you accept something by changing your perception of it. Next big idea, you can't grow lotus flowers in marble. Quote, in each of our Plum Village practice centers around the world, we have a lotus pond. Everyone knows we need to have mud for lotuses to grow. The mud doesn't smell so good, but the lotus flower smells very good. If you don't have the mud, the lotus won't manifest. You can't grow lotus flowers in marble. Without mud, there can be no lotus. If you know how to make good use of the mud, you can grow beautiful lotuses. If you know how to make good use of suffering, you can produce happiness. We do need some suffering to make happiness possible. And most of us have enough suffering inside and around us to be able to do that. We don't need to create any more. End quote. Imagine the beautiful lotus ponds at each of the Plum Village practice centers. Smell the beautiful lotus flowers. Now, smell the not-so-wonderful mud. Remember, no mud, no lotus. Which reminds me of my last business. I named it Zods, which was a play on the Dutch word for seed. I love the metaphorical power of a seed and had this As a Man Thinketh James Allen quote on our stationery. Quote, the greatest achievement was at first and for a time a dream. The oak sleeps in the acorn. The bird waits in the egg. And in the highest vision of the soul, a waking angel stirs. Dreams are the seedlings of realities. Now, all that's nice and warm and fuzzy, right? Well, when things didn't quite go the way we planned, I like to remind myself and our team that it takes some poop to make a seed grow. Again, no mud, no lotus. How about you? Are you looking to cultivate some beautiful lotus flowers in your life? Let's remember to embrace that mud in which it's growing. Next big idea, nothing survives without food. Quote, the Buddha said that nothing can survive without food. This is true, not just for the physical existence of living beings, but also for states of mind. Love needs to be nurtured and fed to survive. And our suffering also survives because we enable and feed it. We ruminate on suffering, regret, and sorrow. We chew on them, swallow them, bring them back up, and eat them again and again. If we're feeding our suffering while we're walking, working, eating, or talking, we are making ourselves victims of the ghosts of the past, of the future, or our worries in the present. We're not living our lives. End quote. Nothing survives without food. The question is, what are you feeding yourself? Are you constantly chewing on the bad stuff, or are you nourishing the good stuff? In another one of his books called Silence, Tai puts it this way, quote, all the sounds around us and all the thoughts that we're constantly replaying in our minds can be thought of as a kind of food. We're familiar with edible food, the kind of food we physically chew and swallow. But that's not the only kind of food we humans consume. It's just one kind. What we read, our conversations, the shows we watch, the online games we play, and our worries, thoughts, and anxieties are all food. No wonder we often don't have space in our consciousness for beauty and silence. We are constantly filling up on so many other kinds of food. And Eckhart Tolle echoes this wisdom in The Power of Now, where he tells us, quote, once you realize that a certain kind of food makes you sick, would you carry on eating that food and keep asserting that it is okay to be sick? He talks about that in the context of quit doing the things that make you feel psychologically sick. And in The Magic of Thinking Big, David Schwartz uses another metaphor to bring the point home. He tells us, quote, deposit only positive thoughts in your memory bank. Let's face it squarely. Everyone encounters plenty of unpleasant, embarrassing, and discouraging situations. But unsuccessful and successful people deal with these situations in directly opposite ways. Unsuccessful people take them to heart, so to speak. They dwell on the unpleasant situations, thereby giving them a good start in their memory. At night, the unpleasant situation is the last thing they think about. Confident, successful people, on the other hand, don't give it another thought. Successful people specialize in putting positive thoughts into their memory bank. So let's spit out the toxic stuff we're ruminating on and apply that same mental energy to nourishing the best within us. On that note, what thoughts do you need to spit out, and what should you be nibbling on some more? Next big idea, the first thing to do, quote, when suffering arises, the first thing to do is stop, follow your breathing, and acknowledge it. Don't try to deny uncomfortable emotions or push them down. Breathing in, I know suffering is there. Breathing out, I say hello to my suffering. To take one mindful breath requires the presence of our mind, our body, and our intention. With our conscious breath, we reunite our body and mind and arrive in the present moment. Just breathing in mindfully already brings us a surprising amount of freedom. With each breath, we generate mindful energy, bringing mind and body together in the present moment to receive this caring acknowledgement of our suffering. In just two or three deep breaths taken with your full attention, you may notice that regret and sorrow about the past have paused, as well as uncertainty, fear, and worries about the future. End quote. So suffering arises. First thing to do, don't run away from the pain and into whatever thing you do to numb yourself. Instead, take a deep breath in and a nice long exhale. Acknowledge that suffering is present. Then take another nice deep breath. Maybe name it to tame it before taking another nice deep breath. Then remember Vernon Howard's brilliant wisdom, quote, encourage yourself by remembering that any detection of negativity within you is a positive act, not a negative one. Awareness of your weakness and confusion makes you strong because conscious awareness is the bright light that destroys the darkness of negativity. Honest self-observation dissolves pains and pressures that formerly did their dreadful work in the darkness of unawareness. This is so important that I urge you to memorize and reflect upon the following summary. Detection of inner negativity is not a negative act, but a courageously positive act that makes you a new person. End quote. How about one more nice, deep breath? Yep, suffering may be there, but so is happiness. The lotus flower is blooming. Next big idea, billions of funerals and birthday parties every day. Quote, there are cells inside your body that are dying as you read these words. 50 to 70 billion cells die each day in the average human adult. You are too busy to organize funerals for all of them. At the very same time, new cells are being born, and you don't have the time to sing happy birthday to them. If old cells don't die, there's no chance for new cells to be born. So death is a very good thing. It's very crucial for birth. You are undergoing birth and death at this very moment. End quote. In our nutrition notes, I like to talk about the fact that our bodies are constantly renewing themselves, and I love this fun and wise mystical approach to the cycles of death and birth. Our most recent reference was in Susan Pierce Thompson's Bright Line Eating, where she tells us, quote, every cell in your taste buds dies and is replaced by a brand new taste bud cell every 2 weeks. So as you detox, your taste buds will be going through their own evolution, and in very short order, your food will taste amazing. Now, did you notice those cells dying? And what about the new ones being born? Death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth. The cycle repeats itself endlessly all day, every day within our bodies. But we're not even thinking about it, and we're certainly not trying to organize billions of funerals and billions of birthday parties all day, every day, right? So what if we brought a little more of that perspective to the inevitable deaths and births in the rest of our lives? That creative idea die? Yep, it happens. Oh, look, another one was just born. All day, every day, in every aspect of our lives. Let's embrace the natural cycles and inherent impermanence of life and flow. P.S. That reminds me of Nietzsche and Thus Spoke Zarathustra, where he tells us, shedding one's skin, the snake that cannot shed its skin perishes. So do the spirits who are prevented from changing their opinions. They cease to be spirit. Then there's Joseph Campbell's epic, if you want resurrection, you must have crucifixion. And his playful, you can't make an omelet without breaking the eggs. Next big idea, the two arrows. There is a Buddhist teaching known as the arrow. It says that if an arrow hits you, you will feel pain in that part of your body where the arrow hit. And then if a second arrow comes and strikes exactly at the same spot, the pain will not be only double, it will become at least 10 times more intense. The unwelcome things that sometimes happen in life, being rejected, losing a valuable object, failing a test, getting injured in an accident, are analogous to the first arrow. They cause some pain. The second arrow, fired by our own selves, is our reaction, our storyline, and our anxiety. All these things magnify the suffering. The second arrow may take the form of judgment. How could I have been so stupid? Fear. What if the pain doesn't go away? Or anger. I hate that I'm in pain. I don't deserve this. We can quickly conjure up a realm of negativity in our minds that multiplies the stress of the actual event by 10 times or even more. Part of the art of suffering well is learning not to magnify our pain by getting carried away in fear, anger, or despair. We build and maintain our energy reserves to handle the big sufferings. The little things, we can let go. The two arrows. Quick recap. Get hit with the first arrow and it hurts. Get hit again in the same spot and it hurts 10 times as much. Moral of the story, life will hit you with arrows. Don't hit yourself with another one in the same exact spot. Which reminds me of Kristen Neff's wisdom from Self-Compassion, where she tells us that suffering equals pain times resistance. Quote, I once went on a meditation retreat with a wonderful teacher named Shinzen Young, who gave me words of wisdom that I'll never forget. He said that the key to happiness was understanding that suffering is caused by resisting pain. We can't avoid pain in life, he said, but we don't necessarily have to suffer because of that pain. He chose to express these words of wisdom with an equation. Suffering equals pain times resistance. He then added, actually, it's an exponential rather than a multiplicative relationship. His point was that we can distinguish between the normal pain of life, difficult emotions, physical discomfort, and so on, and actual suffering, which is the mental anguish caused by fighting against the fact that life is sometimes painful. So, want to master the art of suffering well? Practice the stoic art of acquiescence or Byron Katie's work of loving what is. Whatever you do, quit shooting yourself with the second arrow. P.S. How about some philosophical trivia? Did you know that meditators and hopeful people can endure more physical pain? Yep, throw their hands in a bucket of ice water, for example, and they can keep it in there longer than others. Next big idea, why the Buddha kept meditating. Quote, when I was a young monk, I wondered why the Buddha kept practicing mindfulness and meditation even after he had already become a Buddha. Now I find the answer is plain enough to see. Happiness is impermanent, like everything else. In order for happiness to be extended and renewed, you have to learn how to feed your happiness. Nothing can survive without food, including happiness. Your happiness can die if you don't know how to nourish it. If you cut a flower but you don't put it in some water, the flower will wilt in a few hours. Even if happiness is already manifesting, we have to continue to nourish it. This is sometimes called conditioning, and it's very important. We can condition our bodies and minds to happiness with the five practices of letting go, inviting positive seeds, mindfulness, concentration, and insight. End quote. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? The Buddha became a Buddha, or awakened or enlightened one, and then he kept on meditating. Why? Because everything is impermanent, including the Buddha's happiness, and definitely mine and yours. Good news, we just need to keep feeding our happiness, which of course begs the question, what do you do that helps you stay plugged in and happy? Tai shares the Buddhist practices, but what are yours? Ultimately, it's a simple two-step process. Know what works, do it, even after you've become enlightened. Here's to learning the art of suffering well as we embrace the mud and the lotus. That is a quick look at this great little book, No Mud, No Lotus. If you enjoyed it, I think you'll also enjoy the other notes on Tai's great books, including Pieces Every Step, The Miracle of Mindfulness, Fear, Silence, and some other notes on great books, Self-Compassion, As a Man Thinketh, and the Dhammapada, plus Loving What Is Now, for some great quotes, and we'll wrap it up. All right, all of these are from Thich Nhat Hanh. Most people are afraid of suffering, but suffering is a kind of mud to help the lotus flower of happiness grow. There can be no lotus flower without the mud. Have I repeated that enough times for it to stick? No mud, no lotus. Next little quote from Ty. He says, if we can learn to see and skillfully engage with both the presence of happiness and the presence of suffering, we will go in the direction of enjoying life more. Every day we go a little farther in that direction, and eventually we realize that suffering and happiness are not two separate things. Ty tells us, if, however, we are preoccupied with the fear and despair in us, we can't help remove the suffering of others. There is an art of suffering well. If we know how to take care of our suffering, we not only suffer much, much less, we also create more happiness around us and in the world. To stay in the present moment takes concentration. Worries and anxiety about the future are always there, ready to take us away. We can see them, acknowledge them, and use our concentration to return to the present moment. When we have concentration, we have a lot of energy. If you want to experience what the end of suffering will feel like, it is in the here and now with this breath. If you want nirvana, it's right here. Breathing in, I know I am breathing in. Breathing out, I smile. Deep looking can dismantle these kinds of notions. There is no birth and death. Everything dies and renews itself all the time. When you get that kind of insight, you no longer tire yourself with anxiety and aversion. The most precious thing you can offer the person you love is your presence. It's not something you can buy in the supermarket. Every life has its trials and tribulations. We can navigate them more skillfully when we don't waste time and energy shooting ourselves with a second arrow, such as dwelling on how much greener the grass is in our neighbor's yard compared to ours. And finally, it is mindfulness that makes the present moment into a wonderful moment, into a happy moment. The practitioner is an artist. She knows how to bring happiness into the here and now with her practice. No mud, no lotus. What mud do you have in your life these days? Can you take a new perspective and see that your lotus flower is using that mud to fuel its own growth? See it? Embrace it. Learn how to suffer well so you can learn how to enjoy a more enduring, abiding level of happiness. Hope you enjoyed. Look forward to sharing more. Have another awesome day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this philosopher's note. Please go to optimize.me to download more.